Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table.
Shavua Tov, and welcome back to Interesting Questions. We are on the sixth perek of Pirkei Avot, and tonight we're going to do Mishnayot 7, 8, and 9. So here we go. Gedola Torah shehi notenet chayim la'oseha ba'olam hazeh uva'olam haba. Torah is great because it gives life both in this world and in the world to come. Shenamar, that it says, Ki chayim heim lemotz ehem ulechol b'saro marape, for the Torah's teaching is life to those that find them and causes healing to the flesh. Va'omer, refuat tehi. And it also says it is a healing. L'sharecha, to your body. V'shikui la'atzmotecha, and marrow for your bones. Va'omer, etz chayim hi l'machazikim ba v'tomcheha me'ushar. It also says it is a tree of life for those who grasp it, and all of its supporters are praiseworthy. V'omer, and it also says, ki liviat chen heim l'roshecha v'anakim l'gargorotecha. For a garland of grace are the Torah's teachings around your head and necklaces around your neck. V'omer, and it also says, titein l'roshecha liviat chen ateret tiferet t'magnecha. It will give to your head a garland of grace, a crown of glory will be bestowed upon you. V'omer, and it also says, ki vi yirbu yamecha, for your days shall be increased through me, meaning through the Torah, v'yosifu lecha shnot chayim, and they will increase the years of your life. V'omer, and it also says, or echemim bimina b'smola osher v'chavod, the length of days are its right hand, and its left hand are wealth and honor. Va'omer, and it says, ki orech yamim ushnot chayim v'shalom yosifu lach, for length of days and years of life and peace will be added for you. On to Mishnah Chet. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer. Rabbi Shimon, the son of Yehuda, said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Hanoi v'hakoach v'haosher v'hakavod v'hachachma v'hazikna v'haseva v'habanim na'el tzadikim v'na'el le'olam. That beauty and strength and wealth and honor and wisdom and old age and fulfillment and children, these all come to the righteous. V'na'el le'olam, and they benefit the world. Shneamar, that it says, Ateret tiferet seva bederech tzedakah timatze, a crown of splendor is ripe old age in the path of righteousness. And that is where it can be found. Va'omer, Ateret zekenim b'nei vanim, it is a crown of the aged for grandchildren. V'tiferet banim avotam, and the splendor of children is their parents. Va'omer, and it says, Tiferet bachurim kocham v'hadar zekenim seva. The splendor of young men is their strength, and the glory of old men is their fulfillment. Va'omer, v'chafra halvana uvosha hachama kimalach Hashem tzva'ot bahar tzion of Yerushalayim v'neged zekenav kavod. Embarrassment. The moon will be embarrassed and shamed, will be the sun, because the reign of Hashem, master of all, will be on the mountain of Zion in Yerushalayim, and before his elders will be honored. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya would say, Elu sheva midot shemanu chachamim letzadikim, kulam nitkaimu berebi uvavanav. These seven qualities that the sages enumerated are for the righteous. And Rebbe realized these in his sons. Mishnah Tet, Amar Rebbe Yossi ben Kisma, Rebbe Yossi ben Kisma said, Pa'am echad hayiti mehalech baderech. One time, I was out walking on the road. Ufaga bi adam acher, echad, and I met a certain man, v'natan li shalom, and he greeted me, v'hechzarti lo shalom, and I greeted him in exchange. Amar li, he said to me, Rebbe, me'eze makomata, he said, Rabbi, where are you from? Amarti lo, I said to him, Me'ir gdola shal chachamim v'shal sofrim ani, I am from a great city of scholars and sages. Amar li, he said to me, Rebbe, ritzoncha shetador imanu bimkomenu, v'ani atein lecha elef alafim dinrei zahav, v'avanim tovot umargaliot. He said, Rabbi, will you come and live with us in our city? And I will give you thousands of dinars of gold and precious stones and pearls. Amarti lo, I said to him, Im ata noten li kol kesef v'zahav v'avanim tovot margaliot shebaolam, even if you were to give me all of the silver and gold and precious stones and pearls in the world, eini dar ela bimkom Torah, I would only choose to live in a place of Torah. V'chein katuv b'sefer Tehilim, because such as is written in the book of Tehilim, ayidei David melech Yisrael, by the hand of David the king of Yisrael, tov li torat picha me'alfei zahav v'chesev, it is better for me to be engaged in Torah, with Torah in my mouth, than all of the gold and silver. V'lo od, and not only that, ela shebishat p'tirato shel adam ein melavin lo la'adam lo kesef v'lo zahav, for the avanim tovo to margaliot. And not only this, but at the time of the departure of a person from this world, they do not get to take the gold or the silver or the precious stones or the pearls. Ela Torah umasim tovim bilvad, but only the Torah that they have studied and the good deeds that they have done. Shenamar, that it says, Behit halecha tanche otcha, that when you walk, it shall guide you. B'shachbecha tishmor alecha, and when you lie down, it shall guard you. V'hakitzota hi tisichecha, and when you awake it will speak on your behalf. When you walk, it shall guide you. Ba'olam hazeh, meaning in this world. B'shachbecha tishmor alecha, and when you lie down, it should guard you. Ba'kever, when you are lying in the grave. V'hakitzota hi tisichecha, and when you wake, it shall speak on your behalf. La'olam haba, this is for the world to come. V'omer, and we say, li hakesef v'li hazahav, it will say, mine was the gold and mine was the silver. Nu'um Hashem tzvakot. And Hashem is the master of all legions. So that's quite a bit for us to take in, but clearly there seems to be a message of the importance of Torah over physical wealth. Akiva, what do you make of that, particularly of that story?
Before I touch on that, Avi, I have to wonder. We know that when these were being written, it was every word mattered. Every word was expensive, and therefore no words were given an extra, an excess. The entire Mishnah of Pirkei Avot, very often it reminds us the importance of studying Torah. This seems a little excessive in the reminder aspect, especially this far in. I don't know that anybody would have forgotten, and certainly I don't know that it is necessary to have three separate Mishnayot on the value and the importance of learning Torah. We have to have missed something.
So I would remind you that these are not traditional parts of Pirkei Avot. These are toseftas. These are additional parts that were not included in the Mishnah. Therefore, the wording may be more liberal, more not liberal, but there may be more words than you would find in a traditional Mishnah, because they had not been pared down by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. In addition, the whole reason we added a sixth perek was to fill the 6 weeks between Pesach and Shavuot. And so the idea that if you're going to choose a theme for that perek the week before Shavuot, what are the toseftot that you're going to pick? The idea of studying Torah when you are about to celebrate the holiday of receiving the Torah, I think makes a lot of sense. And so if you are building towards some sort of crescendo in terms of Torah learning, the fact that you're, hey, remember, we're about to celebrate Shavuos. We're going to be celebrating the giving of the Torah. Here we are, and let's not forget about all the important things, right? How important learning Torah really is. And so here's the wind-up to it. So that is why I think that is the theme that seems to have been picked for this sixth perek, alternative to the first five prakim of Pirkei Avot that we learned, where, again, there were themes, but they seemed to follow each other more than being focused on a particular theme, which this seems to be.
So I can get behind that, and it's still quite a wind-up.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that you know, one of the things, if I was going to pick a point to disagree with, one of the things that we often say is that if the rabbis don't have a singular proof, right? So in other words, if I'm making an argument and I have a very singular proof that proves my point, I will bring that one piece of text, particularly if it's a text from Torah or from Tanakh, and that will prove my point. And I'll give you an example. When we talk about how do I know that I can say Shema, whether I'm lying down or sitting up or standing up or walking around, well, because it specifically says in Shema, B'shach b'cha uv'kumecha, when you're lying down or when you're getting up. And therefore, I have one two-word proof from Shema itself that proves my point, and I have no need to give you any other proofs. Here, we seem to have five or six different psukim that all try to make the same point.
So is it trying too hard?
I think it might be, right? The term that came to my mind was, thou dost protest too much, right? It seems to be trying too hard. And so while I think we all buy into the idea that Torah learning is important, and that it certainly is similar to and worthy of things like beauty and strength and wealth and honor and wisdom and old age and fulfillment and children, it seems to be trying very, very hard. And that's why I sort of found the story from Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma about being offered to move to this locale to be so interesting.
So, Savi, I appreciate that you brought that back full circle. And I find it interesting as well, because I think that it's actually... the way it starts off is a suggestion of someone, presumably somebody important, runs into someone else important. One of them is highly knowledgeable. One of them is highly wealthy. And the one who's highly wealthy says, will you stay with us? Will you teach us? Presumably the idea is, will you teach us? Because it goes back to one of the very first Mishnayot in Berkei Avot, which is, take for yourself a teacher. So here we have that very callback. And yet, the answer was no. And while I think it's very important, and I certainly agree, right, we're here in Boca, where we don't have to search too hard to get kosher food. We can go out to eat. We can, we did oftentimes go to several different locations to buy our Pesach food, but that was presumably by choice, because there's a market here. There's several. But the idea of staying in a place where people can appreciate and learn from you, that would probably be really important too. In fact, I believe there's a whole Kiruv network of shluchim that hold by that very idea, that it's important that everywhere you go, there should always be someone Jewish. So, yeah, I kind of think I do have a problem with it. I have a problem with the fact that it seems to be saying, nope, I'm going to go where it's easy to live instead of where maybe I can do the best work.
So I too have a problem with this. And as I struggled with the issue, I came up with only two options. Option number one is that shlichus, or shlichut, as you pointed out, while it is a wonderful and important thing, may not be for everyone. And so maybe Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma knew himself well enough to say, I'm just not the right guy for this. I need to be in a place where there is a community. Sometimes having many friends in rabbinic pulpits, as well as many friends who are rabbinic educators, sometimes we talk about the difference between them being that if you're a rabbinic educator, it means you almost certainly live in a community where there is some infrastructure. You are, right, there's at least a school if you're there teaching, which means there's probably enough Jews to have some sort of kosher market and a mikvah and a shul, if not more than one shul, right? And so there's infrastructure there. But sometimes if you're a pulpit rabbi, it means you are, especially at the beginning of your career, you may be someplace where there is very minimal infrastructure. You may be trying to build that infrastructure from scratch. And that takes a very different skill set and a very different temperament than somebody who says, well, I already need there to be at least certain things in place, right? I've talked to Chabad Shluchim who say that part of their annual budget has to be plane tickets for their wives to fly someplace to be able to go to the mikvah each month. Because otherwise, there's no guarantee that she'll be able to go. And there's no mikvah or body of water that is usable around as a mikvah until they build one. Another example is, right, kosher food, that there are people who pay tremendous amounts of money to have kosher food flown in or live on diets that are primarily fruits and vegetables, while trying to figure out what kind of kosher infrastructure they can put into place.
I recall that one of the shluchim that I met when I was in Boston, I think was talking about, he met the shliach in China, and I believe the comment was, or they talked about how they had this huge walk-in freezer that could supply or hold days, weeks of meat because it was such an issue to be able to get any.
Right. And I think that, not everybody is cut out for that kind of lifestyle. And so I certainly do appreciate the people who are in far-flung places and provide an opportunity for Jews to be able to be there, whether it be for vacation or for work. But again, I'm not sure it's cut out for all of us. That was one option that perhaps Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma knew himself. The other option is that perhaps Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma got a sense or knew this gentleman, and what was missing, right? This rabbi seemed to be willing to bring him in, but was this gentleman who's clearly wealthy willing to fund the other infrastructure? In other words, I'm happy to be person number one as long as you're willing to use these jewels and pearls and all of this money to also help build a yeshiva, a day school, a mikveh, the infrastructure needed for Jewish life. But if you think just bringing in one rabbi and saying, all right, now we've fulfilled our responsibility, is going to be sufficient, that's not me. I have to live in a place where there is Torah. I'll help you build a place where there's Torah. But if all you want is the token rabbi in order to say we've got what we need, you're sadly mistaken.
See, I can't get behind that one because sometimes it has to start with that, and then the token rabbi who's been given all of the wealth and all of the jewels and all of the can start to put into place more and more and more as he brings in more excitement, more rejuvenation, more interest, at least ideally. And I think that there would be many places, probably our good old Boca Raton included, that if that wasn't what someone did and someone started, then we wouldn't have that.
So I think there's some truth to that, but I think, again, you have to be able to read the community, and I'll give an example. I know of somebody, this was probably the late 70s, early 80s, when somebody who was just coming out of Yeshiva University was offered a position in a traditional synagogue, I won't say the city or the name of the synagogue, that was traditional. So it did not have a mechitza. And this person went and asked Rav Soloveitchik if he was allowed to take this post. And the Rav said yes, but he needed to convince the shul to put in a mechitza in within 2 years. They had separate seating, but not a mechitza. He was told he had to convince them to put in a mechitza within 2 years, or he needed to leave. He was unable to convince them in that time. And so at the end of 2 years, after his first contract was up, he left that pulpit. And so sometimes I think that there are things you know when you get there, and there might be things you know from the outset. Sometimes when we have negotiations with schools or discussions with schools about, well, what are you trying to build here? What is your vision for what the community should look like? And you go, well, this is the kind of school we want to be. This is the kind of community we think we are. Well, okay. Well, that doesn't fit with the kind of community I want to build. And therefore, I'm not the right person. I'm not the right fit for you to hire. Final thoughts on this, Akiva?
Well, I mean, I'm in some ways, you know, being a little bit provocative with the questioning, because I do understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, I came from Boston from my training, not grew up there, but with my training, where really a sixth of addiction psychiatrists stay in Boston and the rest go everywhere else. So I do understand what it is to go into a place where there is less of you to go around. And certainly I could say also that I understand the idea of being in a place where there's less of you to go around, but there seems to be a lot of it and a lot of ideas of what it should be, whether or not that's based in evidence. So I get what you're saying, and I hear that, and at the same time, I don't think I am somebody who would be the first
the first starter, so to speak, or even the second or third. And I think sometimes we surprise ourselves with what we're capable of. Which probably brings us to our question around the Shabbos table, which is, when did you need to take on something that you thought you couldn't do, and you achieved it? And how did you do that?